Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to the WEEI Celtics Podcast, powered by CLNS Radio with Sam Packard and Jared Weiss.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Don Pardo. That's right. This is the WEEI Celtics Podcast. I am Sam Packard, joined as always by Jared Weiss and the C's. We have 1 week till the playoffs. They've officially made the playoffs. They've qualified. They're going to be in. The question is, are they going to be a 3 seed? Or are they going to be a 6 seed? No one really knows.
Who knows? So the Celtics, really anything can happen over those last three games. And we're really not going to know what the final result is until we actually get down to that final game. Just because the way that the schedule works out, it's pretty fascinating.
It's pretty wild. And here's the question. Do you think the last three games where the Celtics play the Heat, the Hornets, and what's the last team? How can I forget this?
The Hawks.
The Heat, the Hawks, and the Hornets, do you think that can change your perception of kind of the matchups of these teams? Does, like, if they lose really badly to the Hawks, does that mean you would fear, like, their ability to beat the Hawks later in the season? How much of an impact do these three games actually have kind of outside the standings?
Well, first off, I just noticed that all three of those teams start with an H. Never noticed that before. I feel like whatever team lose, like, whoever the loser is in that last regular season game, once they get to game one of the postseason matchup, they're probably going to win that game. I mean, that's some, like, quick turnaround on revenge there. Does it even count as an extra game in the series, really?
Who knows? That's a wild psychology to think about, because they're literally playing the three teams they could potentially play in a first-round series. I think home court advantage is a huge issue, just because we've seen that sway NBA games, and the teams are so close in their talent level and execution right now that, who knows, it might come down to something as small as a home court advantage.
I mean, the Celtics are pretty committed to it. Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder both said on Wednesday night that they want that 3 seed. And I asked Isaiah Thomas why he wants that 3 seed. I don't think he had a good answer for it. He just wants that 3 seed because I think it's more of a pride thing. But as much as it is a strategy thing, and don't forget, if you get the 3 seed, most likely if you're winning that first round matchup, you're getting Toronto in the second round. And while I feel that it doesn't really matter who you get in the second round because you're going to face one of Toronto or Cleveland in the next round anyway, it's just a matter of, does it really make that big of a difference if you get to the conference finals? Yeah, I guess it is good. The team gets more gate revenue anyway, so it's good for them. And you get a bigger profile by being in the conference finals. But they're going to have to go through Toronto and Cleveland. That's the road to the road to Oakland or San Antonio, but probably Oakland. So does it really make a difference what seed you end up with between the 3 and the 4?
No, not really whatsoever, but it's kind of that player's mentality. They're going to want to finish as best as possible, and you can't really blame them. And I'm sure Dwayne Wade just came out and said that the Heat really want the home court advantage. It's just the player's nature to kind of be at...
Every team wants that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just to be able to use your own toilet in the locker room. I mean, that's really what it comes down to, right?
Yeah, your home shower, just everything. Everything's a lot more comfortable at home. But all right, we have a really great show today. To talk about the Celtics, we're going to bring in Larry H. Russell,
host of Celtics Beat on CLNS Radio. You probably know him from that podcast, which is the only podcast more famous and better than our show. He also writes manifestos that are thousands of words long on CLNS Radio, seemingly on a monthly basis. Larry, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me here, Jared. Appreciate it.
So, first off, this is the talk of the town because the Celtics PR department was smart enough to put this out there as soon as they got back. Is Isaiah Thomas a All-NBA player? They set it up pregame, asking that question, promoting him as such, and he certainly Wednesday night's game looked like an All-NBA player.
It's funny that too. Sorry, I interrupted you, which I'm really good at doing, and you know my show. But if you're ready to ask me, is he an All-NBA player? Is that the question you're ready to ask me?
I don't know how you figured that out, but yep, that was the question.
I actually just saw the Celtics, too, literally like within the last 5 seconds, and this was, you know, being taped at 5:30 here on the East Coast on Thursday. Within like the last 5 seconds, they put out a retweet if you think Isaiah Thomas deserves to make the All-NBA team.
So did you retweet?
No, I didn't. But I don't think that is a – you know what, I probably should if I'm going to be doing it for the best of the team. I will do that as soon as this interview is over. But to sort of jump on that, though, so the quest is for him to get him on the All-NBA third team. Outside of Paul Pierce making the All-NBA third team in 2002, which I remember very well, I don't think I can name any All-NBA third teamer, like, ever. Like, I don't think I can name one guy from last year's All-NBA third team. I know, like that's like Al Jefferson territory, sort of. So I don't really know. But I guess it comes down to the fact of, is he one of the top, let's see, six guards in the NBA? This year, I would say, probably. I'm actually just surprised at really how well he's doing. I mean, for the longest of time, I was very ignorant and very biased because he was just a little guy that could score. That was really what the perception was of him. I was just tremendously biased in that when he was starting, I didn't even think he was even a starter on a very good team. So because of that, I thought that Brad Stevens sort of just kept him off the bench, coming off the bench as a sixth man and being that Vinny Johnson or the classic sixth man that we all think to be. But obviously he's superseded all expectations. So if it makes him feel that much better, just as the huge social media campaign that the Celtics went on to get Isaiah as an all-star, which they ended up succeeding, and they went on a mass campaign with that. If it makes them feel that much better to make it All-NBA third team, and the Celtics are, as an organization, are as successful as Isaiah is on the court, obviously producing, but the Celtics as an organization really pushing like crazy to get him as an All-NBA third teamer, if that's really what's going to really be beneficial for him and the team going forward, all four. And yes, I guess every one of our listeners, we should go ahead and retweet. I'm going to do that right now, actually.
All right, while you're hitting the retweet button, I think it was a really good point you made that you don't remember any of the any All-NBA third teams, because it's a completely arbitrary point there.
Pearson 02.
Can I tell you who the last guards to be all third team All-NBA were? Last year, it was Kyrie Irving and Klay Thompson. The year before that, Goran Dragic and Damian Lillard. The year before that, James Harden and Paul George. And then the year before that, Dwayne Wade and one Rajon Rondo.
Oh,
so Rajon Rondo is a third All-NBA player. So you can use that as your barometer.
But was that 2012 year then, probably?
Yeah.
When he was rolling up all those triple-doubles on national TV?
Exactly.
Okay.
But that's the exact point, is that it's kind of an arbitrary, who are the top six guards? Personally, I don't think this season he is. I think on our podcast last week, we had him as the fifth best point guard. So if you include any shooting guards in the All-NBA, that would be your James Hardens and your Jimmy Butlers.
So that's
and
the
your
main
Klay
question.
And your Klay Thompson. If you ask if he's a top eight guard or a top 10 guard, he could probably be on the fourth All-NBA team. Like, you could just keep going, because it's a completely arbitrary kind of process of just selecting and ranking players. The one point that I thought was interesting, I think John Corrales said it on Twitter, was that the Celtics are making this huge push, not because they truly believe that he's an All-NBA player, but it's kind of a message to other free agents that this is how we treat our stars around here. We really support them. This is the type of environment you're going to want to be in, because this is an organization that really cares about his players, which I thought was an interesting one, because it wasn't one I considered initially.
I've been thinking to myself, which I do a lot of, which I guess I'm not really proud of. I think it is 100% nailed it, in that when they did this also for the All-Star game, it also isn't just so much of, you know, we really care about you, Isaiah, this is what we can do for you and for other players going forward. It is just showing the power of the Celtics as an organization and their worldwide fan base, in that, hey, we're able to run these type of campaigns for you. We're able to get you out there to not just the fans nationally. The Celtics do have a national fan base. It's funny, they are the fourth team here in Boston when all things are equal. They're the fourth most popular team. We can accept that. But worldwide, there's popular, I don't want to say anybody but the Lakers in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And that is a message that I agree with that 100%. And I've been thinking to myself, that's something that they can show to players. I think it does hold a little water. I'm not sure how much it holds, because it's really different strokes for different folks. Some players are different around the league, but it certainly doesn't hurt, and it does sort of exemplify how strong the worldwide fan base and the outreach that the Celtics organization has, that they're able to do campaigns such as this and successfully do it.
I mean, most teams put on campaigns to get their kind of their star player as an all-star and all-NBA team. So the Celtics definitely aren't alone. I mean, everyone's seen the Boogie Cousins videos from last year that the Kings put out. Andre Drummond earlier this year did a lot of internet memes, videos, stuff like that this year with the Pistons. So it's a responsibility of the PR department to try to get that kind of viral campaign going for their players. So it's smart the way they handle it. The Celtics tend to be more traditional with it, where like they just issue like a PDF with like a graphic with the guy's stats, stuff like that. They didn't do any funny videos or anything like that. Although I think Isaiah Thomas could probably do some good funny videos.
He's done the Pizza Man video. We know he has acting chops.
Chris Bosh for the All-Star game way back.
That was a classic. Yep.
That's what made me first really like Chris Bosh as a human. Just those wacky cowboy things. I would love to see Isaiah Thomas in some sort of outfit pitching for some sort of goof. I just love seeing more personality from the team. Because they're a little off, or other than Evan Turner, you don't get that much from them off the court.
They should do like a dunk contest between him and Lucky. Lucky gets the trampoline, Isaiah has to actually dunk. I think that would be pretty interesting. But to be serious for a minute here, you're looking at the third All-NBA team. It's going to be, I think Kyle Lowry would probably get second, but he might be on third. Basically, Isaiah's competing with James Harden and Jimmy Butler, I'd say, for that last spot, and DeMar DeRozan.
Butler's really fallen off the second half of the year, though.
Exactly.
I don't know if he's hurt or whatever. And James Harden, if you're talking about guys falling off, Butler's falling off. James Harden is really, since the first month of the season, has been ripping it up, even though Houston sucks.
Well, Harden's been scoring like crazy lately, but the thing is, he's been a little inconsistent. The Rockets are so inconsistent that while even though he's like towards the top of the league in PER and scoring, I think the way that the team has failed so much this year, losing the coach getting fired, and a lot of people holding Harden responsible for that, that really hurts his reputation. And I think that's where guys like DeMar DeRozan and Isaiah Thomas went out, where they're kind of looked at as elevating their teams this year, while Harden's been kind of holding the team back in a lot of respects.
Yeah, there was a little bit of backlash on Harden. Even if you recall, he talked about how there was the whole thing with, blaming Harden for Kevin McHale being fired. And as it turned out, I can't remember who was reporting now. I feel very bad for doing that, which is what I do a lot. When I say someone report, and I never name who it was. But even when he was first fired, McHale was first fired for that matter, everybody sort of pointed the fingers at Harden. And there was such a negative backlash at Harden, not just for doing that, but it was for his style of play with the Rockets. There was a segment with Shaq and Kenny and Charles Barkley on Inside the NBA. Pretty much they were all universally going after Harden. I think even Smith, who is very aware of doing that. And those guys hold a lot of influence in terms just of the rest of the media. So I could see where you're getting at with that, but I think Harden has a strong enough name power, and he is having an exceptional season. So I'd have a hard time seeing now. I don't know the media members well enough who vote on this well enough to or the coaches and whatnot who vote on this to see what they're going to do. But I would think that one or the other would more likely come down to Butler and Thomas. And with you talking about disappointing teams, Chicago's right at the absolute top of the list. They're probably going to miss the playoffs. And Butler hasn't had the best of seasons, particularly in the second half of the year. I don't know if he's hurt. I don't know what's going on there. I'm not in the ebbs and flows of Chicago. I've just looked at the inputs and the outputs, and right now the outputs for him aren't even all that good, and the team outputs aren't all that good for Chicago. So it probably does come down to Thomas and Butler. And since this is the WEEI Celtics podcast, we almost certainly have to go with Isaiah Thomas, and I just went ahead and retweeted my
The retweet is in?
Yes, from two Twitter accounts.
Oh wow, those are two big votes for Isaiah Thomas.
I would agree with you that I would put Thomas above Butler and Harden, but I think the one player we often forget about, and it goes back to Jared's point about kind of elevating your team, would be Damian Lillard and what he's doing in Portland, because no one really thought they were going to make the playoffs. But that's enough.
I had him on my second team. That's why.
Yeah, he would be a second team guy, and
with Klay Thompson probably.
And then Chris Paul.
I forgot about Chris Paul. Crap. All right.
And there's just too many good
sorry, Isaiah. Sorry, Isaiah.
But let's focus on the four remaining games that the Celtics have. They're locked in a crazy race in the East. I think one game separates the four teams. And the Celtics actually play each of these three teams in the final three games of the season. So how do you think Brad Stevens approaches this? They have a couple of guys who are banged up. They only have, between Marcus Smart and Evan Turner, they have two working eyes. Jay Crowder still needs a little time for his ankle. And considering you're battling all these teams for playoff positioning, do you rest these players in hopes of just having your best team out there for the playoffs, or are you gunning as hard as possible for that third seed?
If you're asking me, I would rest them, but I don't think that's what the Celtics are going to do. I think they're going to try to win all their four remaining games, if for no other reason. I think case in point was bringing Jay Crowder back. What was it, like 15? He got hurt on a Friday night against Houston, and then he came back on a Wednesday, like 2 Wednesdays later against Portland, and he was hurt again. And that seemed like really quick for a high ankle sprain. You know, whenever they, with those guys, that's a very common injury in the NFL. Whenever that happens in the NFL, guys miss a month. And when guys do come back very quickly, Dwight Freeney played a Super Bowl, totally ineffective. And, of course, we all remember Rob Gronkowski's Super Bowl against the Giants. Was just completely useless. So that seems a little rapid for the Celtics to bring back Crowder that soon. Sure enough, I don't want to say he re-aggravated, but I guess he was sore that he couldn't play that Friday against Golden State. And then when I was watching your guys on the guard report against New Orleans, he was complaining about how tired he was. And I don't have a question of him being out of shape, or I don't know how you can get out of shape over the course of 2 weeks. But I didn't think that was a smart idea to bring Crowder back that soon. And I even made a complaint about it on my show. Even though I'm not in the ins and outs of that team every single day, I just look at the historical examples and of that injury. That is a month-long injury to recover from. I think the smarter thing would have been to pretty much stick Crowder out as long as you possibly could. But if you're asking what I would do, I'd be sitting guys down, asking what the team's going to do. They're going to be gunning for that third seed, or the highest possible seed they're going to do. I don't think there's really any debate about it, because I mean, we've seen what they've been doing. They really, really pushed these players into playing. They had Avery Bradley play in Phoenix. They flew him in from God knows where, and they played him in Phoenix so he could guard Devin Booker. So I don't know. I don't like the way they do it, but that's probably the only complaint I do have about how they do it.
And so do you think that they are at significant risk going into the first round, that they could have guys starting to drop?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, that organization does not have the best history, particularly over the course of the last 7-8 years, of managing players' health. In my eyes, I think there's so many historical examples of that. In terms of that being one of my primary concerns of how they play in the playoffs, a lot of that still has to do with circumstance. Once again, I just don't see these players enough every single day where I can say, wow, that guy's hurt. I don't know why he's playing. The concerns that I would have going into the playoffs is, of course, just more on the floor, just the actual individual matchups. Say, if you know, they play Atlanta in the first round, it'd be the size that Atlanta has and the talented big men that Atlanta has. That has been the primary weakness for the Celtics this season. They play the Milwaukee tomorrow. A lot of people are chalking that game up as a win. We've seen Greg Monroe tear them apart. We've seen Brook Lopez tear them apart in a game back in January. We've seen Jahlil Okafor in the first game of the year. Jared Sullinger doesn't even come into that game. They probably lose the freaking Sixers in the opener because of their struggles with big men. So it's more just, I would say, if you're asking me for my emotional investing interest that I still have with the Celtics, still probably more has to do with matchups on the court than it has to do with just the fear in the back of my mind that someone's going to go down and break their neck and be paralyzed for life. But it's still a more of a possibility than what it could have been had, at least in my eyes, they probably managed some guys a little bit better than they are.
So considering all of that, what do you think that is the easiest path for the Celtics? Who do you think should be there?
Charlotte. I mean, I don't think there's any debate to that, right?
I mean, I think that's an interesting debate because Charlotte's one of the hottest teams in the league right now, but Atlanta has always matched up well against them, and Miami's talent level is probably higher than anybody
else. But they've also dominated the Heat in all three games this year.
It's true.
They've beaten Charlotte twice. They only played Miami twice, right? I think they've beaten Charlotte and Miami each twice. I know one game against Charlotte was really, really close, but that was also in a really tough situation, if I recall. They were on like a brutal back-to-back. I can't remember who they played. Oh, they played Golden State. Didn't they play Golden State?
It was the night after
before,
the Golden State game.
And then they went down to Charlotte, and that was a game that no one thought they'd win because they just played a freaking double overtime slobber knocker. Wow, I just quoted Jim Ross. they just played a double overtime game against Golden State. No one thought they'd beat Charlotte. Then they went down there and they took care of Charlotte. I can't recall if my brain's a little mushy. I can't recall if that's the one where everyone was sort of criticizing that Isaiah Thomas got away with the travel at the end of the game.
I think so, yeah.
But they still, you know, they went down and they beat Charlotte twice. They've won two games in Charlotte this year. They played two in Miami, but it was a split. they played one in Miami, one here. But I just look at Atlanta size. I mean, I think Forsberg just put it out today that projections would have Atlanta actually as the favorite if they played in a road series. Miami, you know, Wade is actually having a pretty good year, and that team has a lot of playoff experience. I think there is something to that. I know there's a lot of talk about cliches and intangibles. A lot of the times that seems to play its way out in the playoffs. So I'd be concerned with that. Charlotte, I mean, Al Jefferson he's been hurt this year. He's been coming off the bench. So that fear of a big man really beating up the Celtics may not be there with that team. I know they're playing really well, but I'd feel pretty confident with them going against Charlotte, particularly if they had home court advantage. If they had home court advantage and they drew Charlotte in the first round and say it's a 3-6 matchup, I'd be stunned. I'd be stunned if they lost them in the first round. I really would.
All right, then last question here. After Sam Hinkie's manifesto hit the airwaves and the Twitter waves on Wednesday night, it was identified he quoted probably was over 20 people from history, or it was 13 people from history. If you were writing your resignation letter from this show right now, who would be the person you would quote?
Napoleon is someone whom I've looked up to my entire life. Napoleon and Julius Caesar were my idols growing up. So if you were just talking about how I would quote them, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, those were two people who, you know, Caesar was assassinated, and Napoleon was exiled. So they really didn't resign. So I think they were really forced. So I don't know how I would quote them if I was stepping down from whatever I was stepping down from.
Et tu, Jerry?
I guess so.
How about Richard Nixon then? Do you have any good Richard Nixon quotes if we're going for a person who has resigned from a famous position?
Nixon had a killer closing address, but I can't really pull a quote off the top of my head. I guess going into the helicopter is probably the image that we could probably say for them.
All right, so all the people out there in Radio Land can picture Larry H. Russell right now.
Just throwing up the deuces.
Peace hands in the air. Letting the people know that he's with them and he is not a crook.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, Larry, tremendous. Larry H. Russell, the host of Celtics Beat, which is actually a pretty phenomenal podcast that I've actually hosted plenty of times in the past. Larry, thanks for joining us. Where can we find you on the interwebs?
That's one thing that I think I've criticized millennials pretty much forever because they frustrate me like crazy, especially now I have to work with one. But people have to realize now that's the one skill that people have that they're still good at finding people on the internet. So I think if you just Google Larry H. Russell, I'll probably show up.
That's showing a lot of faith in our fans, and I appreciate that. Thank you, Larry.
Unfortunately, our fans only use Bing, so that won't work.
If any of our fans use Bing, they should stop listening right now, and they need to get the f*** out of here.
So that was Larry H. Russell from CLNS Radio, host of Celtics Beat on CLNS. I'm Jared Weiss from CLNS Radio and Celtics Blog. This guy over here is Sam Packard from WEEI. Twitter handle is
@SamPackardNBA. So if you guys enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, leave a review, leave a comment. If you have any questions, use the hashtag WEEICeltics. I give you my promise that I will answer anything on air. I can't say I'll be truthful, but I'll answer it.
I mean, we've answered some pretty fucked up questions so far on the air, mostly from what's the guy's name again?
Seafoam Jones.
Oh, my God. It's such a good Twitter handle. But this show is on the CLNS Radio mobile app. You can download that on iTunes and in the Google Play Store. Is that what they still call the Android Store? I don't know. I have an iPhone.
Yes, I still use Google Play Music.
There you go. So, yeah, you can download it for Droid as well. It's a great app. There's bonus content attached to this podcast in there that give you our video content and audio content from the Garden Report postgame show, which is the postgame show I host after every single Celtics game, which is filmed at the Garden. Sam is usually on the show when he's willing to stay late enough to actually come on. All right, so we got another podcast that we just released here. We talked to Jake Fisher, who is from SI.com and is kind of one of the people really on top of the situation in Philly, who's sat down with Sam Hinkie many times. We did almost an hour with him talking about the Sam Hinkie Philadelphia 76ers breakup, and it's a must listen. So listen to that as well. We'll see you next week on the WEEI Celtics Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.